Okay, welcome everybody. We are going to, the goal tonight, this is by a special request. We were, many people are going to be running their Yom Tov house for the first time. Many people have been in homes which all the Yontif preparations, the Seder preparations, were taken care of. And now for the first time, you're going to be confronted with running a home and particularly a kitchen for Yom Tov, which is then going into Shabbat. So it's an opportunity. So our whole message, we want to turn lemons into lemonade. We want to take the opportunity before us to make it a learning opportunity. So it's always important to be an educated Jew, and maybe this will be the last time that you're running your own kitchen for Yontif. Maybe you always do it, and now you'll be able to know the basics. Let's start off with the most basic distinction. Let me ask you all a question. What is the difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov? What's the difference between Shabbos and Yontif?
On Yontif, you can cook.
Yontif, you can cook. What else? That's it?
You can also carry.
You can carry.
Are you asking the differences halakhically as far as what's permitted and what's not permitted, or on a more philosophical level?
Let's start on the halakhic level and go to the larger point. The larger point is there's a hierarchy of holiness. On the top, you have Shabbat, followed by Yom Kippur, and you measure the holiness by the fact that we're not allowed to do any of the 39 creative labors, malacha. And Yom Tov, you're allowed to. The pasuk says, "Kol malacha lo tasu b'hem," you may not do any manner of work. Achasher yechol l'chol nefesh shu levado yaseh, except for what must be eating for any person. So the key distinction between Shabbos one end and Yom Tovim is the concept called Ochel Nefesh. Anything which is necessary for the enjoyment of Yom Tov may be done. So as Shana pointed out, I can cook. Not just can I cook, I can also do things which are approximate to produce food. And not only that, they even allowed things that are allowed to enjoy the Yom Tov, like carrying, like bringing gifts to people. And therefore, they gave the Torah, allowed all the malacha of carrying to be suspended for Yom Tov, provided that the work is done for the Yom Tov celebration. So that's the first idea. Everything that's related to Ochel Nefesh. Now, this general dispensation, just to go on the philosophical point, is because the organization of Shabbos and Yom Kippur is what they call Kul Hashem, which is a day designated all for God, while Yontif has a dividing of Chatzi Hashem, Chatzi Lachem, which means half for God, half for you. So ideally, the day is divided by half a day is spent in davening, ideally going to shul, learning, and the other time is partying with your family and friends. Okay, both this year is curtailed. So in order to facilitate, the Torah allowed, due to this lower level of Kedusha, the heter to do cooking. And things related to cooking, and not just cooking, but things that are involved in meal preparation. Okay, so that's our first point. So we have a macro distinction. Shabbos and Yom Kippur are the most holy days. Shabbos higher than Yom Kippur. It's devoted purely in the service of God. Plus, we have plus with the addition of three meals on Shabbat, non Yom Kippur, and on Yontif. Yontif is really the day where they want to promote the Jewish people would be on the three festivals in Jerusalem with the family, with friends and Jewish unity. So therefore, the Torah facilitated that by allowing cooking to be able to be permitted and things necessary in media for cooking preparation. Okay? So that's the first major. Now, the rabbis came along. They didn't want people to spend their day being involved in laborious activities and then lose out on the Yontif celebration. So they made a number of limitations. Basically, prohibited activity which could be done equally well before Yontif as on Yontif, it makes no difference in the finished product. For example, if I light a candle, if I grind flour, there's no real difference between I grind flour before Yontif and I grind it on Yontif. There's no idea of freshly ground flour. But freshly baked bread makes a world of difference. So therefore, you're allowed to knead the dough, make bread, cakes, cook dishes, cook them on Yontif to enjoy that. So now, one of them, the prohibitions for example, I have a candle. I'm allowed to light one candle from another candle from a pre-existing flame, provide that candle is going to be used for Yom Tov uses. For example, I want to light the candle and take it outside to light my barbecue. No problem. I want to light the candle to turn on the my gas of my stovetop. Again, no problem. Okay? So that's the basic idea that on Yom Tov we're allowed to cook, again, provided that it's you're not doing things which are done on a large scale, you know, sorting or grinding, as long as you do whatever you need for a day's use. But to spend all day grinding whatever flour, but or whatever, or spices, let's say, only for what's needed for the Yom Tov. Okay, so that's the basics. That's the basic distinction. So what I want to do. Now I sent you a sheet. I don't know if you guys got it. You guys got the sheet? You got the sheet I sent out in the email. Let's just take a little peek at it. All right, so that's 1A. If you take a look at it, I'm not going to screen share. I can screen share. Do you guys have it? Bring it up?
Yeah, I got it.
Good. All right, so now also, it's also Yontif. Let's say a person has a Simcha coming up. Well, why don't I spend my time Yontif making cookies that I can eat during even Chol HaMoed, or after Pesach, or after the holiday? Am I allowed to do that? What do you think? Am I allowed to cook for after Yom Tov?
If it's intentionally specifically for after Yom Tov, then no.
Correct, because the dispensation to cook is literally like, it's like a license. It's a license to increase the joy of the holiday. Okay? You know what I'm saying? So if you're not going to use it, now, you could, you doesn't mean you have to work out specifically. Let's say you want to eat meat. You don't have to only cook precisely what you're going to eat. Whatever you're going to eat, you know, some of it. Just as long as you don't say, well, I'm going to cook this roast and I'm going to eat the first piece of the roast today, and then I'll have leftover for after Yom Tov. Just say, I want a fresh roast, and I'm going to cook that, the end. If you happen to have leftovers, you're good to go. Okay, is that clear? All right, let me ask you another question. According to the Torah, would you be allowed to cook from Yom Tov for Shabbos?
No.
The answer is yes. Because you're cooking for a higher Kedusha, for a superior holiday, not for a Chol. But since they did not want you to get confused, and you only could cook for that day, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to provide you with what they call an Erev Tavshilin, which is a declaration you make over an egg and a matzah, saying that all the food that I'm going to cook this from Shabbos, from Yom Tov to Shabbos, making a sign. Then the rabbis allowed you to cook from Yom Tov for Shabbat. Okay, let's continue on. I'm just going to go through some basics. Then I'm going to walk you through my kitchen. All right. Let me ask you this question. This is a very tense issue. I just want to, you may have heard there's an issue, now it's not an issue this year, but of inviting a non-Jew for a Yom Tov meal. Is that permitted?
No.
Sure.
Why not? What, are we racist?
Sometimes.
No. Are you allowed to invite a non-Jew for a Shabbos meal? And that's my hint.
Yes.
100%. Yes. But you're not allowed to invite them for a Yom Tov meal or like a Seder. Why not?
Does that have to do with teaching?
No.
I thought you couldn't teach like halacha since you discussed the Exodus and the mitzvah of the holidays.
No, they're welcome there. I mean, they could be there. There is a kind of prohibition of teaching them, you know, a whole kind of Torah. But if they're part of a group, it's not a problem. And they have the 7 minutes, but they know. So there is also a corpus of Torah to teach them. But I just want to explain that. What's the issue? Why can't you invite them for Yom Tov? And we'll talk about what happens when they show up. All right, we'll get to that. We got to be real. We're dealing with MJE situations here.
Is it because they might like turn off some lights or turn on some lights, or they won't know all the rules?
Turn off the lights. Not your problem. They don't have a Yom Tov. They don't have any prohibitions. They can turn lights on, turn lights off. They can eat chametz. They got no problems. They have no obligations. What's the issue? I just want to alert you to the issue. The idea is that the dispensation to cook on Yom Tov is only for those people who are celebrating the holiday. A non-Jew, as beloved as he is not celebrating Passover. Okay, now if they happen to show up, obviously they can eat, but the rabbis made a gezerah, they made a decree, don't invite them because what are you going to concern to do? That you might cook more for them. You might end up cooking for them on the holiday. Okay, so that's the concern. But again, if they show up, no problem. You know, I mean, it's not your, you know what I mean? You obviously got to be very careful not to cook for them. So you can give them a glass of tea, hand them the tea bag, let them cook. You know what I'm saying? Cooking on Yom Tov is only permitted for Jews, okay?
What if they, like, you don't ask them, but they say, like, I've never been to a Passover Seder, can I come? Like, they ask, not you.
So, right, yeah, you'll say, look, our Seder starts, you can't invite them. So you'll say, our Seder starts at 8 o'clock, and we're having a whole bunch of people. If you're, you know, if you're available, fine. I don't know, you know what I mean? It can't be a technical, you know what I mean, an invitation.
Right.
If they show up, you know what I'm saying? Oftentimes, there are non-Jews a part of the family, so it becomes very tense. I'm just alerting you. So therefore, you try to say, you don't invite them. Say, oh, Seder's at 8. We're having the whole family, and of course, we're expecting the whole family.
Gotcha.
Okay, you got to be, you know, so you technically, now again, why am I being so legalistic and technical? Because again, we're trying to balance two things. We're trying to follow the Torah on one hand, and we're trying not to create alienation and discord, which is another value. We're looking for shalom, okay? So you got to, when we're dealing with shalom bias, we're trying to, you know, we will be, legalistically precise just to get things going here. You know what I'm saying? All right, let me do a few more questions. I'm going to take you on a tour of our house. All right, I'm shooting down the
Can I ask a question about a food prep? And I'm sorry if you already touched on this. Is the baking of bread separate from other food preparation on a Yom Tov, or is all sort of food prep permitted?
All food prep is permitted, which is immediate. Now, sometimes I'm not going to every single detail. It's a little bit on your sheet, for example, you can take the flour, you can knead the flour, you can make the cake, you can make the chicken, all the normal stuff. Grinding has to be done in a certain kind of, there's certain things that have to be done to make sure it's clearly evident that you're not doing it like in a commercially large way, okay? Because you want to make sure, the rabbi said, they limited the more larger size check that the Torah gave to make sure that people don't spend their Yom Tov basically, laboriously cooking. So they said, if the food's going to, whatever you're going to prepare, that won't make a difference, prepare it before Yom Tov. So you'll be able to enjoy Yom Tov if you're not sitting in the kitchen all day long. And stuff that it's critical for, that's going to taste better, you can, you don't want to grill a steak a day before. That's terrible for those mediators among us. You know what I mean? You want that steak, the grilled chicken. I know that Suzanne, our vegan friend, is suffering here. But you want that off the grill. So that cannot be done before Yom Tov. You got to be doing that on Yom Tov. Okay?
Okay.
All right. I want to go through some more, just a little roundup of the basics. I'm going to talk about, you mentioned that you can't light a new fire, like a match. That's why you have to have an existing flame around. People use a yahrzeit candle, or any large candle. We're going to talk about how to use our oven very shortly. Some other details are on the sheet. You can read it through. You can always shoot me a text about everything else. Also, the mitzvah, very important this year, of Simchas Yom Tov. And this is going to be a hard mitzvah to accomplish. And the obligation of Simcha is on the father or the husband to make the kids happy. So children, candy. For the women, a new outfit or jewelry. For the men, meat. And also just to be in a joyous mood, which is very hard because, quite frankly, most of us are feeling down, depressed, and a little bit anxious. Okay? So some mitzvahs are easier to accomplish at different times. And this year, the mitzvah of v'samach b'chagecha, you should rejoice on your holiday, is going to be a challenge. Okay? So I talked about that yesterday in the class about the Hallel. How can we sing Hallel when we're living through a plague? We discussed that at length. I already posted the class. Check it out on yitorah.org. Okay. Are you guys ready for the tour? Any questions about the basics? We got this is the basics. You got that? We're good? All right. I'm going to call my wife to join me because she'll have what to say. All right. Okay. Here we go. Oh, my wife's here. Okay. Let me just do the old switch around. Hi, Marie. Say hello to everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, great.
Hello.
So good to see you.
I don't see anybody.
Oh, I see, well, all right, so
it's nice to see you.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay, so I'm going to start. I'm just going to take a little tour of our kitchen over here, of our dining room kitchen. Okay, this is not in any particular order. Just going through the order of our house. So this is called where we do our Shabbos candles. Okay. Yeah, there's a little liquor there also. All right, so got up L'chaim.
What's this Zman name?
Oh, that, oh, we have, I'll show you that. In our own house, we did our own Zmanim chart. Our own, so it says, this past Shabbat, Parsha Vayikra, that's the week, Neirot, candle lighting was 6:56. Hanates, my wife is saying, it's what?
It's good. You don't have to have a chart like a shul, like we do, but it's a good idea to have a chart or put on the fridge or post somewhere so you can remember beforehand what all the times are. Like, look up what time is candle lighting, look up what time is whatever Zmanim you might need to know. It's a very good idea to put that up somewhere before our chag starts.
Excellent advice. So here we put all the charts, sunrise, Safman, Kriya Shema, midday, and when Shabbos is over. Okay, that's just a little bit, over the top. Okay, so whatever, all right. Now, what you need to know about, do men have to light Shabbos candles and Yom Tov candles?
Yeah, yeah, if they're not married, right?
Shapiro, 100% correct. That's it. Now, so there's a whole debate if we're going to, the candles for Shabbos and Yom Tov are there for practical reasons to illuminate where you eat. Here's our candles. Here's the table. Now, don't put candles on your table. You put it on a little, because they become mooks and you can't move them off. You want to change the tablecloth. Okay, now, there's an issue because our candles here are right next to our, rather significant LED lighting. So what we do is my wife, who lights the candles, will turn off the lights, make the bracha on the candles, l'halig ner shel Shabbos, l'halig ner shel Yom Tov, turns on the lights, and then lights the candles. Okay, so you make the blessing on both the electric and the candles. Now, there, the dominant custom is not to do that, because as long as it's adding some light, and I guess it's adding some light, it's sufficient. But that was the suggestion of Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. So, right. Also, you want to have a yahrzeit candle. We have a yahrzeit. All right, we have a yahrzeit candle. All right, so we want to have a. All right, so unless you have a pilot light, you want to have a yahrzeit candle. Does everybody know what a yahrzeit candle is? Everybody good with that?
When someone dies.
Yeah, but its particular feature is that it lasts for 24 hours. All right, we just discovered that we do not have a yahrzeit candle. All right.
We sell 48 and 72-hour candles for the Chag.
Right, so here is actually a 70. This is a 7-day one. This is actually for a Shiva. Okay, this is a little bit unnecessary. But the basic idea is...
If my husband lives in Mariana, does it still work, or does that disqualify it?
No, it doesn't qualify.
But no, this is hard. It's hard to get the plane
right
because it's too deep in.
Right, it's too deep in. But anyway, the idea is that, don't get this one. Get a 2-dayer or a 3-dayer because it's too hard to get it, because you want to be able to take a match into here.
You want to light a short yahrzeit candle, because then, like, at the 23rd hour before it goes out, you're going to use that flame to light your candles for the next night. And the same thing the next day. So you want to get two of these so that you can then use that fire to light the candle on the second night. And then you could do it again to light another one for the third night. So you don't want a tall one, because then you're not going to be able to stick your hand in to catch the flame of when it's almost burnt out.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Let's continue on. All right. Moving on. We have the very important, for those who are drinking coffee and tea, you want to keep hot water available. On Yom Tov, you can cook, so you can add water to the urn. Now, depending on your urn, this one is a little fancy that it has a Yom Tov mode that if you can add water and it won't turn on the heating light. Okay? So what you can do is, there's a debate if that's a problem. You can heat up water in a pot and then you can pour it into the urn and therefore having... Yeah, right. My wife has a suggestion. Go ahead.
If you do not yet have this kind of hot water urn that's really big, then I suggest you just go online to one of these Judaica stores and buy one that will be more useful, a Shabbos or Yom Tov mode. That will be more useful than just getting a regular one at Bed Bath & Beyond, because, again, the feature that the light doesn't go on means you can just keep pouring cold water in and not worry that it's cooking. So if you have one already, don't have to buy a new one. But
if you just have a kettle. We'll talk about if you just have a kettle also. If you're going old school and you don't need that much hot water. Okay, we're a little bit, we like our coffee, we like our tea, we're drinking a lot. Let's talk about coffee. All right, so we have the Ninja. We're a fan of the Ninja. So we said this before Shabbos. Now, it's unfortunately good for one day. It doesn't read things, so I can only, like, I get one day of brewed coffee. Typically before Shabbos, fill it up, set it up, so it goes off, I don't know, 7, 8 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning, boom, fresh coffee, like a boss. We continue on. Okay.
Wait, can you explain that to me? How does that work, that it's not setting it off electrically?
Because I'm setting it, it has a built-in timer. So any malacha that starts before Shabbos and then continues on Shabbos or Yom Tov is not a problem.
Right, but so does it every day? You can time it.
No, it does not. No, it does not have that timer. It's only good for the first day.
Okay.
Now, but on Yom Tov, you can, if you have, you get the French press. We have French press also, so you can use a French press. You're allowed to do what? Borer. On order, which is the separating between the bad and the good. Does everybody know what a French press is?
It's basically first day of Yom Tov, great coffee. Second day of Yom Tov, French press, annoying. Third day, Shabbos, instant coffee or iced coffee. No way around it. Enjoy.
Okay. Love it, right to the point. Okay. We continue on. We can talk about a dishwasher. This is a dishwasher. They're all different. On the MJ. Okay, so this has a, okay, fine. But the key point is, you want to, in other words, dishwashers can be kosher for a Pesach, and ours is, we can't really use ours because ours have all this fancy schmancy, it turns off the digital stuff. Questions about that?
So if you have a dishwasher that just has buttons and stuff like that, either way, you can't do it on Yom Tov because it's a lot.
They can't turn it on. Okay.
You could kosher it and use it after Shabbos Saturday night if you have.
And during the week.
You know, and during the week, it can be kosherable, but pressing buttons or pushing it in, you can't do it.
Not so helpful. Okay. While I'm looking at the sink, very important. Okay.
Sorry.
On Yom Tov. Yeah. Question.
I follow Sephardi Minhag, but when I was following Ashkenazi, I was told that you can't kosher plastic in the dishwasher.
All right, so it is true that in most years that's a legitimate stringency, but again, in general, because we don't want people going out getting new stuff, the general consensus to be lenient this year specifically to be lenient on that.
Right.
Okay,
but there's a need. Do you recommend Ashkenazim to like replace those racks in the dishwasher or what?
Not this year. Not necessarily this year.
Not this year, but like, I'm just curious if I had mislearned back then that the dishwasher racks, years, would they be allowed? Could you kosher them?
There's a variety of practices about what is can be done on. We'll get to that. You could just do a run, two runs with the racks, new racks. There's a debate about that. But this year we're just being more lenient. All right, my wife. Yeah.
What?
Dead? One second. Just, I lost. Okay. Questions? All right. Let me get into it.
Okay.
I don't know. Turn it off. All right. All right. So now, it's as far as Yom Tov. What is unique about the hot water and cold water on Yom Tov?
You can use hot water like you normally wouldn't be able to use on Shabbos.
Why is that?
Because on Shabbos, if you're just in your own house versus an apartment building, then you have you're basically triggering the heater to go on. On the holiday, it doesn't matter because there's a pilot light.
So, correct. In other words, on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook. So the issue is that not turning on the heater is that what happens when I put on the hot water, and the sink starts to go out. new water comes in to the into the tank and is cooked, which is prohibited on Yontif, on Shabbos, but permitted on Yontif. Also, my wife pointed out, just as handy, just as a practical element, your dairy, you want to may have something, brushes. Now, brushes, on Shabbos, you need a brush because you can't do squeezing.
You can't use regular sponge. You have to have special kind of sponges. It's great we have hot water and it's great we can wash the dishes. You can't use a regular sponge. They sell brushes like this, which are great. You can get things like this that you could use. And you even have plastic sponges that are not squeezable, all made of plastic, but a regular sponge made of sponge you can't use. So they sell all these kind of things, and you need them for milchik or fleishik.
Okay, also, while you have your thing, Marie, how would you go ahead and kosher such a metal sink?
I'm so glad you asked. Koshering is so much fun.
Okay, go ahead.
The first thing you have to do is make sure everything's super clean, because you can't actually have schmutz. So you would clean all your countertops, and clean your sink as clean as you can, scrub it so there's nothing there. Then you're going to wait 24 hours. So it's clean, and it's 24 hours goes by. If you need to use it in those 24 hours for something cold, fine. You could just rinse it off afterwards because it's hard not to use a whole sink. But basically, it's clean from chametz, it's clean from hot, and it's totally clean. After the 24 hours, you get to kosher. And if you have granite, you can just pour boiling water over all the surfaces, little by little, making sure the boiling water covers it, and you're kosher. It's now back to neutral. It's not milchik, it's not fleishik, it's kosher. So if you want to have a milchik section or a fleishik section, however you do your kitchen, but it is kosher for Pesach. Same thing with your sink. If you have a metal sink, you can kosher it. If you do not have it, it's made of ceramic or something else, unfortunately, you cannot kosher it, and you have to buy one of those bins, like a basin, and keep it in your sink, and just don't let anything touch the outside. It's not really such a big deal. We did that many years. Get a big basin. If you have one sink, get a milchik one and a fleishik one, and just do everything in that basin. Hold the stuff up, stack things in, and just dump the water out. No big deal. When you're koshering and you need to get boiling water, you don't want to burn your feet, so wear boots and have towels nearby. The easiest way to do it is to take a tea kettle, or this kind of tea kettle, if you have one of these kind, guys, or a tea kettle, and once it gets to a rolling boil, you just pour it out, watch where it goes, done, it again, continue where you left off, do that through your kitchen. If you don't have one of these and you're having a little pot of water, good luck, then you're going to have a ladle, or you're going to be pouring boiling water out of a pot. There have been times when people have done that here. A big pot of boiling water, boom, hot everywhere, floor. Not my way.
All right, my wife is being generous. I'm no longer allowed to kosher in the kitchen.
Then he's not allowed to kosher in the kitchen. We use this. We get it done. Minimal on the floor. No one burns their feet. All good.
Okay. We continue. We move on. Now, could anybody, who here has a gas oven and who has electric? Who, tell me. Who has gas?
I have gas.
Oven. And
cooktops. Does everybody have gas?
Electric.
Yeah.
Does anyone have
gas?
I do. Do desktop first, because that's the
hard. So let me deal with the last stuff.
Because that has the most minimum. You can't cover it because it'll crack. You can't kosher it. That's the situation.
Now,
if you're buying
electric, okay. So here's the deal.
Desktop, electric, gas.
Okay, so just
if you have
to buy. So, but most of you guys, let's start off with the most. There's, as my wife pointed out, there's a glass top.
There's glass top.
Hold on.
A second.
Good.
Okay, there are three kinds of stove tops. There's glass top, which is considered very fancy, although very difficult kosher wise. Electric, which has like those burners that warm up by electric, and gas. If you're trying to make your own kosher kitchen, no one suggests you buy a glass top, but sometimes you end up in a house that has a glass top, so there are ways to do it. But just for your knowledge, don't ever really buy one like that if you're starting to buy off. Electric or the gas are best.
Gas is way better.
But not every house has gas.
Okay. So let's talk about, all right, so I'm going to talk about let's talk about what are you allowed to do? What are some of the issues do you guys think about with a gas or electric oven?
Low heat to high heat.
The stove. Yes. Want to say it again?
The knob on the gas range from like low heat to high, like a change in temperature.
Okay, so you're allowed to cook. So again, we're going to talk about the koshering. Okay, so yeah, okay. My wife says we're going to actually show, we're going to show the oven. All right, so the oven. Okay, the oven. Every oven, you have to kosher the same way. If you have self-clean, you just do a self-clean run and it's kosher. Everything in there plus the racks. That's the set it and forget it option. And if you have gas, or maybe I don't know if some electric might have that as well, great. Does anybody not have a self-cleaning oven?
Mine is self-cleaning.
Does anybody not have a self-clean oven? Okay, self-clean oven is a whole.
If someone doesn't talk to you.
All right, so only one person doesn't have self-clean. Everybody has self-clean. I'm sure some of the guys don't even know.
No, I don't think I do.
Do it later.
Okay, so to kosher an oven, you have two options. You can A, not kosher your oven. The problem is that you have to double wrap everything, which of course limits things if you want to brown, let's say a chicken or a turkey or something. It's very annoying. If you want to kosher it, basically you got to easy off everything, got to be fully clean, and you got to put it to the highest temperature for an hour. For an hour, yes. That's it. Now, let's talk about the stove top. If you have, there's two parts to that. I'm just going to show that. Let me get to the, here we go. Good. Marie's going to do it again. Marie, how do you kosher a stove top?
Okay, we're going to start with the gas stove top. So a typical one will have two or four or five. Basically, the area that the flame goes on, when the flame goes on it, it is koshering the metal. Okay, so if you turn this on, see how high the flame goes. Okay, so this is koshering. I would need to leave this on for about 10 minutes on high.
Well, then you can put a bluff on the bluff.
No, I will leave it on for 10 minutes on high. And I suggest you only do one at a time. We once did all of them at once, and it broke the whole computer back, and we had no stove at all and no oven. So one at a time.
Not that she's bitter about it.
It wasn't me, but you don't do all four on high flame. Okay, so we learn and we live. So you do one at a time for 10 minutes, then
you can understand who's not doing the koshering in this house.
Rabbi Pinney and Marie, this is Jade, and it also can burn your microwave that's on top.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that happened to me in my old apartment. My microwave melted from koshering with all the burners on.
Correct. So you only need a lot of the modern ovens. They have built the computer system right there near the fan, so it's like crazy. And anyway, so you do one at a time for 10 minutes, it'll be fine. Now, there's another issue.
That'd be more than 10 minutes. That's
no, that's what we do.
10 minutes? That's the.
The other thing is, we have to also, we also have to be careful because
What about all this other part of right here?
I'm so glad you asked. That's exactly what I was going to say. In the old times, you have like a round metal rack goes on the fire. So then in that case, if your whole thing is only this big, it's all been koshered, you're good to go. But now we have these fancy ones, and this whole part has not even been near the fire ever. So we could say this part got koshered, but this part is still not kosher. So we have to keep that in mind. And what we have to do is during Pesach, you have to be very careful just to have your pots over the flame and not to slide them over onto the center.
So you have to tinfoil it.
You could cover this part very carefully a little bit, but it is very not advisable to do a lot of covering. You have gas coming out. You don't want things to be stuck. It's just most important to make sure your pot stays on the thing. Sometimes we slide the pots over because we want it to cool or things like that. You keep the pots exactly where they belong. Also, a better idea, if you have time for the future, if this is the kind you have, is what we did is we called the manufacturer and we ordered replacement ones, which you can easily do. So now I don't have to worry about this middle section. And we just take these off, put them in the garage, and put the new ones in. But in the meanwhile, you'd have to be careful. If you don't have this and you just have them by themselves, it's much easier. You just kosher it and you're done.
You still have to clean this perfectly, and right. Have to be covered, and they have to be with some tinfoil.
Right. It's also suggested that around each of these planes, maybe you put one of those like round, they sell these round tinfoil things with a circle. They're made to go in there right. to keep it smooth. That's please. Also a good thing to put there. Again, bend it back carefully. Make sure the gas can get out, that you don't get gas backing up. But that's it. That is also to say that before we even do all this, everything here gets scrubbed down perfectly and cleaned off.
Okay, good.
That's for this kind.
Okay.
So you have this kind that's big, gas kind that's small. The next type is the electric burners. The electric burners are a little different.
Okay, right? let me talk about that a little bit.
Go ahead.
Okay. So electric, the challenge with electric is you can only turn up, well, let's talk about cooking on this, and then we'll talk about
Rabbi? Rabbi, yes. If I could just comment about the gas stove. What I do with my gas stove is I take all the components from the top, put them in the oven, and put it on the self-cleaning cycle with the oven itself.
So I that's have awesome.
The metal rack kind of things that you were just showing, Marie was just showing, and then also there's like the little plate above where the flame is itself, and then there's a plate underneath which is like a drip plate. So all of that right. goes into the oven, and I get it all clean that way.
So Marvin, I had the same thought, and I did that one year, but then I realized that there were all these rubber things on the bottom, and I didn't take them off. And that did not increase my Shalom bias. I'll leave it like that. So I was very good with the cleaning, but not good with the Shalom bias. You want to be able to accomplish
stuff, so I'm okay.
But by the way, but Marvin, that is definitely if you put anything in the self clean cycle, that's what they call Liban Chazak. Liban got more complete burning up, and that is the highest form of kosherization, and that works. That's great. Right. Also, if you want to use your barbecue grill, do what Marvin did. Take your grill, put it in the self clean oven, let it do a cycle. Good to go. Okay. So let's talk about let's see now on Yom Tov. Oh, we'll do all the koshering. Okay, fine. Koshering again, the same thing. Now the electric burners, you just have to turn on till they're red hot, which is basically takes 2 minutes, and everything burns off. It's kosher. No, it's once it's burned, it's burnt. It's
what we did in my house, in your house.
What, you left it on for how long?
That's how you ruined it.
No, I didn't put on all the burners on. No, but you just let them go on. They're burned out. Now, the problem is the other area the ceramic around the electric burners that you have to cover with high or heavy duty tinfoil. The problem is, does anybody have a glass top? Does anybody have a glass top oven? Okay, fine. Okay, nobody has it, so we're not moving on. Okay, let's just finish up with the cooking itself. Cooking on Yom Tov. So cooking is permitted, and you can make a fire for cooking, and you can even extinguish for cooking, but what can you not do?
Lower the flame.
Well, you can't, what's lowering the flame?
You can increase the flame, but you can't lower it.
So, but what malachot are, let's talk about, what malachot are, what malacha is being done by increasing the flame? What malacha is that? What one of the 39 categories of work is turning up a flame of a, let's say, a gas stove? What is malacha is that? That's burning fuel, what they call havara. You're allowed to do that if it's for cooking. So you can turn up the flame. If it's for the sake of cooking. Well, you can also turn down the flame, according to most, if you don't want your food to do what? To burn. but not off. Now, I want to share with you, since most of you have guests, and we're dealing with a three-day yontif, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who you heard him mention him before, there's a debate among him and other halachic poskim whether or not you're allowed to completely turn off the flame. Basically, most authorities say no. He allows it because he wants to argue that it's not extinguishing is not permitted for no purpose on yontif, but indirect extinguishing is. So he wants to differentiate between taking out a log out of the fire and they're just allowing it to go out, pulling a log out, versus turning off the gas, which then indirectly by limiting the fuel, by restricting the fuel, it indirectly turns it off, and therefore he wanted to permit that. So if you are nervous in your house, in your apartment, to have a flame on your stovetop on for 3 days straight, I feel that it's responsible that you may want to use Rav Moshe Feinstein's leniency if you're done on the stovetop to turn off the flame completely. Okay? But again, you'll go to homes that they don't do that. But again, I'm just saying, I want to share with you all the available opportunities. Everybody agrees you can turn up the flame to heat for cooking. You can even turn down the flame to avoid burning. Turning off, most people say not allowed. Moshe says his argument is permitted. Okay, another thing. No, I'm going to show you the. I'm going to flip it around here. What is the issue about turning on the flame of a modern stove?
Electric ignition.
Oh, Marvin, you are all over this. Let me demonstrate that for a moment.
I don't know if you can see me or not. I'm split between an iPad and a phone here, so I'm not sure if you see me or not.
Right. So did you hear the click? Everybody hear the click?
Yep.
That is electric ignition. That is not permitted. That is starting a flame from something new. So what do you do? I want to make some eggs. I want to fry up some eggs. What option do I have? What options do I have?
Tried to bypass that ignition point. I don't know if you really can do it effectively. If you could theoretically get past it, you could use a candle or a match from a lid from a candle to try and ignite it.
Right. So that's the move. What you do is you quickly go past it. You quickly go past it, and you have your candle lit from your yardside candle next to it, and you zip by it so the gas extinguishes from the flame and not using the electric ignition. Okay, so the electric ignition is an issue. We have a Shabbos mode, which really means a yontif mode oven, which has special instructions to be able to dealing with a digital issue. It turns off the digital clock. It uses an indirect process to raise and lower the flame. Now, electric turning up and down is very challenging. Anybody know why? What's the issue with electric versus gas?
It's not as efficient.
I mean, it's efficient. I mean, what do you mean by it's not efficient? What is it as far as yontif is concerned?
I just always heard when.
So the problem is you can only turn up the electric provided there's current flowing, okay? So sometimes they have a light. It's not always so clear to know, you know, if the electric is flowing or not. You can turn it up because if it's not on and you turn it on, you're basically turning on a light. So if you need to speak to an electrician to know when is the current on and flowing, and if it's not and it's not flowing, then you can lower it.
Okay.
My wife has a comment.
Okay. So using the oven, opening the oven and adjusting it when it's already on is the main thing that you need to know. Unfortunately, if you're in a house.
You're talking about electric?
Electric, yeah.
Electric.
And if you're in a, if you have a oven that does not have a Shabbos mode, does anybody have a Shabbos mode on their oven? Anyone have a GE that has a Shabbos mode?
We have a Shabbos mode, but ours is a Samsung.
Okay, only one person has the Shabbos mode?
All right, so let's not talk about
Okay, so Shabbos mode, just follow the instructions in the Shabbos mode and you're set. Most people who do not buy the, people that are kosher, when they buy a new oven or replace an oven, they only buy ovens that have a Shabbos mode. That's just, it costs the same. It's called Shabbos mode, but you can only use it on Yom Tov because GE doesn't know that Shabbos we don't cook. It's Shabbos mode, but you can only use it on Yom Tov. So in the future, you'll all buy one and have one. But in the meanwhile, you have to only know when it goes on. Now, there's really no way to know it. A long time ago, we had a Jewish appliance guy install a little light that would go on special so we would know when we could open the oven. Most people don't have that. So the alternate thing is to be very quiet. And when you go next to your oven and you wait, eventually you will hear that little sound, which if it's very quiet, you can hear. And that means that the fire just went on.
There's no fire in electric.
What, yeah, you hear a sound. You hear it cycling.
Correct.
And then you can open it. It means you have to be quiet.
And turn it up.
Right. It means you have to be quiet. It means once in a while you might have to sit on the floor next to it, and just like read a book and listen, and as soon as you hear it, then you go and turn it.
Now, when it's off, you could turn it lower.
When it's off, you could turn it lower. So it is a little annoying. If that's the kind of thing you have and you don't want to be doing that, you might want to think about your cooking in a way that uses crock pots or hot plates or cooked beforehand.
Well, could you bring out the crock pot and a hot plate just to show about the no oven yontif?
Yeah, everyone knows what crock pots are. There's two kinds of.
Well, I just want to make sure.
No, we did already. I said for sure.
Well, I don't know if everybody knows it.
Well, we can talk about that.
All right, let's talk about that for a moment.
Want me to talk about that?
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay, if you don't want to be, if you are concerned that you will not know when to open your oven or when to adjust it, even though you're allowed to keep
it on. Or you don't want the oven on.
Or you don't want to keep the oven on, which is reasonable because sometimes it gets hot in the apartment and you don't want to have the oven on and a fire and all these things. It's not unreasonable at all to just have access to your stove, either leave a low fire on, cover it with a blech.
Or a pot, or a large pot.
Which is a thin metal sheet, or just a big pot. I like to keep a big pot of water right on top of the fire. I keep the fire on low. The big pot of water guarantees that we remember it's there and don't accidentally like walk into it. The pot with water just like sort of holds the place for safety. And then you can do a lot of cooking right over there. Another thing you could do is cook things beforehand and have a hot plate, an electric hot plate on the timer, and just warm things up like that, which is super easy. Again, if you're not talking about quantities of people, assuming you're just doing a few people, you should be able to cook those few things before, at least the main, put them in tin foil pans, put them on your hot plate, and maybe a few things you could do over here. If you want to make some extra quinoa, you want to boil potatoes, you know, those kind of things you could do over here, stir fry, but your chicken, your meat, or other things could easily be in a small pan. Put them on your hot plate. I personally don't think most of you probably don't need to bother with the oven. The other thing, which is my favorite, is the slow cooker crock pot. That is my favorite Pesach tool. It's easy. It goes, it's safe. It's unbelievable. You can put things in, you could keep it on low for 3 days straight, and just keep putting things in. 10 hours later, your food is ready.
Would you say set it and forget it?
Set it and forget it.
Okay.
It's great. Like you do your first Seder, right? You do your first Seder, and you have your food. And then when you start your second Seder, right, you could put your second Seder, you can put your food in for lunch. So every night, you can put like a meat or a chicken in your crock pot, and you wake up, and your lunch is sort of ready, your main dish. So it's perfect. Chicken, meat, anything. And then you do potatoes and quinoa, whatever on your thing. Done. It's the easiest thing. It's 1, 2, 3. It doesn't take up a lot of space.
Good. Let's talk to the kid in the refrigerator.
Sorry, I have a question. With a crock pot, just to check, you can only prepare the night before for the next lunch, right? You're not allowed to prepare for like the second Seder, right?
Correct.
So usually when you start a Seder, you start the Seder and you could put the food in for lunch. So it's starting to cook while you're eating dinner for the next day.
That's definitely the move.
And then in the morning, when you wake up, it's going to be done. So you could like transfer it or you could leave it there. You know, it's fine. You could even put it in. I like to put it in not when our service starts. I put it in right before I go to sleep. You put the food in at like midnight. Then by 11 in the morning, it's ready. Perfect.
All right.
Do you usher existing crock pot or do you do a get a new
crock pot? No, buy a new crock pot because it's ceramic. Buy a brand new crock pot. Make sure you get a crock pot that does not have a digital setting. The ones with digital setting have 12-hour safety features, and it will not work for 3 days. I actually bought one. I thought it's so cool. Then I did it the first Shabbos, put it on. We woke up Shabbos morning, the crock pot was off. So then we said, okay, that's our weekday crock pot. So you have to get an old-fashioned one, simple, no digital features, just on, off, high and low. Put it on low and keep it on low the whole time. You can't go wrong.
That's a great idea. Great tip. That's a great tip. Now let's talk about, guys, how do you have to organize your refrigerator for Shabbos and Yom Tov? What do you guys got to do? Give me a hint.
Hi, Barbie Penny. This is G. You clean it out. You clean it really good. You wipe it down. And then you separate the stuff that you're selling and chametz stuff or kidney oat stuff that's in the refrigerator and block it off in one area.
Right.
And then everything else can stay.
Correct. That's as far as specifically for Pesach and cleaning it. Also, you could put all your stuff that you want to, your chametz that you're selling, put it in plastic bags and separate it out, block it off, etc. Now, what is the thing you got to do? Make sure your fridge does not have on the beginning of every Shabbos and every Yom Tov throughout the year.
If the light doesn't turn on, you open the light.
Exactly. So you got to – this we have a snazzy, of course, Shabbos. Let me turn it on over here. Yeah. So here, this has the Shabbos mode. You just turn it off. But you can also
– see, look.
Sorry. Okay, go ahead. All right. You just hold it down, and then the whole thing goes off for the Shabbos. Now, which, of course, you just shut it. Okay. Now, just to put it back on for a moment. So if you don't, the old
Shabbos mode on it? Seriously?
Go close.
Yeah.
I've never seen that on a fridge before.
Yeah.
You hold down
certain buttons.
That's so cool. What you do is, here's old school. Old school is called duct tape. And you, where's?
No.
Which one is it? Where is it?
No. Ours doesn't.
Yeah, they're both. You have to have both. You have to duct tape. The old school is duct tape.
No, the old school is unscrew the bulb.
All right, old school is
unscrew the light bulb. But nowadays, the light bulbs are all embedded in. You can't really unscrew the light bulb and screw it back. So you have to find where the knob is and duct tape it down. But again, you get whatever fridge you get when you're in a rental house. When you're in your own house, you only buy the appliance that has Shabbos mode. Ding, done, finished.
Set it and forget it. Okay. So I'm going to scoop back to our other place. I think we've covered an exhausting amount of information, but on a very practical level. Any questions?
I'm with my freezer. Unfortunately, I have multiple freezers, but the main freezer
Marvin, that's not a problem, Marvin.
Well, no, I know, but my main freezer, one of the reasons I also need the other freezer is because it does have a water dispenser, and the water dispenser has lights in it. As soon as you open the door, even though I've shut off the lights and everything else inside, those little LEDs go off. Now, I've heard some people just cover it up with duct tape so they don't see it, but I know it's still working. Is there any solution for that?
So you want to disable what feature in your
two LED lights when you have the water dispenser, you know, the ice dispenser, whatever, on the front door of the freezer. I have it side by side, and as soon as I open the door, the LED lights on the front of the door go off. It's not the light inside the freezer.
And there's no way to block the sensor to disable that?
No, because it's separate, because it's the ice maker, not the other thing. I looked all over the place. I could not find any way to untrigger it.
Marvin, you have stumped me. I don't know.
I've heard some people just cover it up because there's so many problems like this. But again, you're just hiding from yourself what you're really doing.
Right. I'm not sure that's worth anything. I mean, it's definitely – you're not getting benefit from the malacha, which is definitely good. I have to look – I don't know. I don't, I don't, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, if you LED, you cover it up. Let me look into that, Marvin. I don't know the answer.
Rabbi, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Okay.
Rabbi Jonathan Rosen here. We were just about to go out and buy all our Pesedic cutlery and so on and so forth, and then go to the mikveh and kosher all of our new
cutlery. By the way, it's not kosher. It's very important. It's not kosher because your dishes are already, they're new. They're kosher. You mean to tovel them. To tovel them.
Sorry, tovel them. Correct. My mistake. Tovel them. Correct. Correct, Tovel, Sakha. So the problem is Corona has stopped me to go to the mikveh. Now, we are going to switch to paper plates and plastic knives and forks. The problem is we need to still go and buy pots and pans. Obviously, we can't go and Tovel them. Now, what about this filling in this form, this Michirat Kelim? What's the deal with this form?
Okay, so excellent question. So, this year, in most cities, because of the corona, they have shut down, like on the Upper West Side, the Kelim Mikveh. They don't want people going out. They don't want people hanging around. So there is a halachic workaround. The basic halacha is like this. If I buy a vessel, a pot or a pan, that was made by a non-Jew, which is typically the case here in America and mostly in Israel as well, I have to tovel it. But that's if I own it. But if I, quote unquote, sell it to a non-Jew, which is all these things, all these offerings, MG has sent out, all the synagogues sent out, people posted on my WhatsApp chat ways to, quote unquote, sell it to the goy, like you're selling it, you're selling your chametz to the non-Jew, you're selling your vessel, and he's allowing you to borrow your pot. And then afterwards, he's going to give it back to you after, as soon as you can then do what? Go to the mikveh. You know what I'm saying? So basically, it's a legal loophole that you're not the owner. Therefore, you have no obligation to tovel them.
Okay, so I'll fill in this form prior, and then Pesach starts. What happens after Pesach? Does this come back to me, or that's it? It's a one-way street.
It's got nothing to do. You'll read the contract. It's got nothing to do with Pesach. It's got to do with that only. Oh, it'll get back to you when Corona is over.
Okay.
So in other words, it becomes, it's legally owned by the non-Jew. He has lent them to you. You have no obligation to immerse them in the mikveh. All's good. When Corona subsides, he will then gift it back to everybody, and then at that point, everybody has to take their silverware, pots and pans, to, you know, glassware and metalware to the mikveh to do it. But right now, it's a workaround that I'm not the owner. I don't have to tovel it. It's the move.
Okay, so this person will write back, or they will contact us after the fact.
Well, if you go to the the website that was posted on the on my Halacha WhatsApp chat, and you can, or the CRC is doing one, and the RCA, there's all these different, and there's a contract. Kat Gray posted it. She's up on this. She did it. You can just message her. But if you, Jonathan, have you got a chance to go onto my Halacha WhatsApp chat?
No, not yet.
Okay. So, all right. So, so shoot me an email. I'll send you the link. We'll be done.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Any other questions, guys? This is super practical. I don't think I've done as practical and granular a halacha class as this. I literally took you through my kitchen. You know what I mean? Sort of applying the halacha to the nitty gritty. So as nitty and gritty as we can get. All right? Any questions?
I have a weird question.
No request.
Well, I have shmurah matzah from last year that I didn't use. It's wrapped and it's sealed.
No problem. Okay. Enjoy it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
But I'll make a culinary suggestion before you eat it. I would put it in the oven to toast it because it'll be a little bit you know, not so fresh. So this way you'll toast it. It'll be awesome.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other question, guys?
I have a question about the days for counting the Omer.
Nice.
So like for men, you're not supposed to shave during those days unless it's for work or whatever.
Good question.
Like, when does it start? And like, what are the rules? Like, can you like trim it a little bit or like nothing? Like throughout the entire time, like at the 14th day.
Okay. So that's an excellent question. So we count the Omer from the night of the second Seder. Now the counting of the Omer has nothing to do with not shaving. The Torah says we count from Pesach to Shavuot. We're going from the holiday of our liberation of a Jewish people till our receiving of our constitution at Mount Sinai. And that's a joyous time. As you've all learned, it was a time of great distress. There were the Crusades, and even going back earlier, there was the plague that affected the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the custom developed to observe some aspects of mourning, not getting a haircut, some apply it to not shaving, parties, okay? So there's different, some people hold you can't shave, you can't think for the entire 33 days, and then Lag BaOmer comes, shave, get a haircut, boom. Some people say, right, Soloveitchik held that the shaving part was like the laws of the mourner of 12 months. So you can shave once you get scruffy. Until a person say, hey, dude, how come you're not shaving? Which for a guy who shaves on a daily basis is about 2 or 3 days, I would say, certainly by the time. You know, but nowadays, a lot of people don't shave, so whatever. But the no shave look.
Gotcha. All right. So I can count the days, grow the beard out, but like I can trim it once it starts to be scruffy.
Yes, 100%. Any other questions, guys? I got another 2 minutes before I have my next class, which is the model Seder. All right, any other questions? You can always email me, text me, WhatsApp me. I mean, no, basically, the best way, I mean, just repeat this last part. We can't cover everything. The best way, I like to keep all my halacha questions on one area. Join the WhatsApp chat. MG sent out the link, the join link. You can email me. I can send you out again. Post your question because, remember, when you ask a question, you're also educating another 100 MJers who either A, never thought that question, B, thought about it, but were too shy to ask. So that's, you know, if you have a legit question, not personal, but sort of a general how-to question, help the MG community by posting on the WhatsApp chat. You're not just educating yourself, you're educating the entire 100-person MG community. All right, guys, I got to bounce. It was fun. It was real good. And covered a lot of territory.
Thank you so much, Roy Penny.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie Beth.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You got it.